This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Last week on the Weekly Hotwire, we began a three-part series looking at Brazilian beef production through the lens of an investigation carried out by the Irish Farmers Journal. Their team travelled more than 3,000 kilometres across Brazil, visiting farms, feedlots, livestock markets and agricultural supply stores to understand how one of the world's largest beef exporting industries actually operates on the ground. In part one, we heard about the sheer scale of Brazilian cattle production and how different the farming systems can be compared with what we're used to in countries like Ireland or here in New Zealand. From massive feedlots holding tens of thousands of animals through to small subsistence farms. The industry operates on a scale that is difficult to comprehend. But scale was only part of the story. In this episode, we dig deeper into what the journalists discovered when they began visiting agricultural supply stores across Brazil, where critically important antibiotics could be purchased over the counter with no prescription, no identification, and no record of sale. The findings raise broader questions about antimicrobial resistance, global food systems, and how different regulatory standards can affect international agricultural trade. For farmers in New Zealand, where antibiotic use is tightly controlled and livestock traceability systems are among the most advanced in the world, it's a discussion that goes well beyond one country. It's about how global production systems compare and what that means for the future of food safety, public health, and international markets. This is part two of our Brazilian beef series.
Welcome to Iran.
Good. And Thailand. Thailand too, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Obrigado.
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 Flumax.
Yeah. You mentioned it there. You called into them throughout the journey. What did you find and were you surprised by it?
Yeah, absolutely. These were normal stores like any at home in terms of selling feed, selling building supplies, selling dosing products, selling animal medicines. But what we did find was those sort of high level, critically important antibiotics in full view just behind the counter. And we just basically pointed at the antibiotic we wanted, let it be Draxin, let it be Tylan, let it be Cetaphor, which was obviously the one that's really, really highly critical for human health, let alone animal health. And that's the one that Professor Martin Cormigan would have been very surprised at being for sale over there. No record of sale, no barcodes on the bottles or the boxes, no receipts issued. So the level of recording around any of that antibiotic usage is zero over there when you compare with the standard that we have at home. And again, in the fight against antimicrobial resistance, that's the huge issue. If there's unregulated sale of antibiotics out there and there's no adherence at all to keeping those high level antibiotics, we'll say restricted use, in restricted use, then we have a huge problem and a huge problem going forward.
And we're going to listen to Professor Martin Cormigan. He is a consultant microbiologist and professor of bacteriology in the School of Medicine, University College Galway, where he explains exactly what antimicrobial resistance is.
Antibiotic resistance or antimicrobial resistance means that antibiotics that you could depend on to kill bugs when they cause infection, you can't depend on them anymore. So antibiotics that 20 years ago we could use and be confident that they were going to work, now we're not sure whether they're going to work or not. And we often have to use, if you like, more powerful antibiotics in situations where we would have been able to use antibiotics that were easier to use in the past. It's a big problem both globally and in Ireland. It's much worse in some countries than it is in Ireland, but even in Ireland, everyday decisions that doctors are making about how to treat their patients are changed by antibiotic resistance. So it's not a problem for the future. It's a problem we've been living with now for 20 years and trying to manage. And it's getting worse. It's getting worse each year in Ireland and throughout the world.
How do we avoid antimicrobial resistance in the future?
The key to it is controlling how we use antibiotics. Antibiotics make the world a good place for antibiotic resistant bugs. So the more antibiotics there are, the more advantage it is for a bug to be antibiotic resistant. If we use less antibiotics, then those antibiotic resistant bugs have less of an advantage. So we drive the problem. It's a problem that we have made by using antibiotics and overusing antibiotics. And that's true for how we use antibiotics in animals and how we use antibiotics in people. So it's one health, one problem, because it's the same families of antibiotics that we're using in animals and in people.
In Europe, there is, we'll say, rules being implemented and strict laws around the use of antibiotics and around the prescription of antibiotics and controlled use of certain antibiotics. There is rules there.
Europe has in many respects led the way in the control of antibiotics, particularly in control of antibiotic use in animals. So Europe was the first to ban the use of antibiotics as growth promoters. It's made huge strides to control the use of antibiotics under prescription. There's very tight regulation of the control of antibiotics in Europe now.
We're just back from Brazil last week, where we were able to travel across Brazil into many agricultural stores and purchase critically important antibiotics across the counter with no prescription, no proof of requirement. In your opinion, what do you think of that?
Well, we've worked very hard to stop doing that in Europe. And one of the examples you've given me is this one, for example, which is a third generation cephalosporin. So third generation cephalosporins are a critically important antibiotic. And to be able to purchase and use third generation cephalosporins without prescription is contrary to everything we've tried to achieve in the European Union over the last 20 years.
Adam, what was his reaction when you showed him? Because you brought home the boxes and the labels of what you bought over there. What was his reaction?
Yeah, he was really surprised, Katrina, in terms of looking at the boxes, and he studied them, and he studied the active ingredients, and he had a real good interest in it in terms of what you know, antibiotics were available for sale over there. But the line from him that sort of hit home to me was to be able to purchase and use these third generation cephalosporins without prescription is contrary to everything that we've tried to do in the last 20 years in the EU. And that just hit home to me in terms of here we are in the EU, we'll say, applying standards to our farmers, and rightly so, because antibiotics aren't getting any, we'll say, more plentiful, and those critical ones, we have to reserve them for human health. You know, Martin talked about people dying every day due to antibiotic resistance already across Europe and in Ireland, and people will be familiar with sepsis in terms of people dying of sepsis, and this is one of the antibiotics that's used in that scenario. So it just pits the link there back to human health. And yeah, he was very, very surprised and I suppose disappointed in terms of that level of sale of antibiotics in Brazil.
And Professor Cormacan, some people might recognise that name because he was quite prominent here in Ireland during COVID-19. He was one of the experts that was on radio and television. Let's have a listen to what he said there about those particular antibiotics.
If we continue to use antibiotics the way we're using them, we won't win the battle against AMR, because we create a world where it's good to be an antibiotic-resistant bug. If we create that kind of world, bugs change really quickly. They can change overnight. So we feed a world where antibiotic resistance is an advantage. And everybody who's involved in this area agrees that controlling and reducing the use of antibiotics is absolutely the foundation of doing better on the control of antibiotic resistance.
If AMR becomes a bigger problem, this leads to deaths, and it leads to more deaths if AMR becomes a huge issue in the future as regards losing critically important antibiotics.
It is already resulting in people, in early deaths of people. So there are people who are more difficult to treat now in Ireland and throughout the world, and there are various estimates of what the numbers are. It's very difficult to know for sure, but if you talk to anybody who's involved in the treatment of infection, they will tell you that we are already losing people that we would probably have had a few more good years if we didn't have the problem of antibiotic resistance.
Finally, you give an example of the importance of antibiotic use in the cancer treatment, and in terms of that program of cancer treatment, or in specific reference to leukemia, in terms of antibiotics being critically important in the treatment in terms of coming back out of that chemotherapy program.
Yes, so for the treatment of certain type of cancers, you give people drugs that work against against the cancer cells, but they also do a lot of harm to the body's ability to protect itself against infection. And you have to bridge people through that period when their bone marrow is flat with antibiotics to manage their infection. So the treatment of certain types of cancers, including many blood cancers, is critically dependent on having antibiotics that we can rely on to bridge the person over the period while their body recovers from the chemotherapy.
Now, Adam, you also spoke to John Gilmore, who's a vet in County Roscommon, about what vets and farmers here in Ireland have to do to get and use antibiotics.
Yeah, and John explained really, really simply what has to happen here in terms of a consultation with a vet. A vet has to use a professional opinion, his or her professional opinion, and then that antibiotic has to be recorded into the practice, recorded out of the practice, recorded onto the farm, recorded use on the farm, and even recorded the stuff that you don't use in the farm. So John gave a really good interview as regards the difference in standards between Brazil. And again, he was very surprised at the level of antibiotics that we could purchase in Brazil.
In order for antibiotics to be purchased or to be used in an animal, first of all, there has to be a consultation where a farmer will engage with the vet. The vet will decide on what treatment needs to be used, and then a prescription will be issued. That prescription now in Ireland, for the last number of, this year, we have the National Veterinary Prescribing System. So those prescriptions all get logged centrally, and so the farmer and the vet has that information logged centrally, plus that information is there available for it to be monitored by the Department of Agriculture as well. So that needs to be, that prescribing piece needs to be done, and that information needs to be logged and recorded. And then the farmer has to log that information as well, and they also have to keep, they have a requirement to keep the prescription, and also they have a requirement to record the medicine usage. So when they use the product in which animals, they have to record which animals they're using it in.
What's your opinion on being able to purchase critical level antibiotics over the counter in Brazil? Do you think that's acceptable?
I think it's actually quite shocking. It's something that, you know, doesn't happen in Ireland. It's something that hasn't happened in Ireland for a long time, even before the National Veterinary Prescribing System. There are antibiotics that should be reserved just for critically important cases, when they have to be used and where you can justify their usage, and where no other antibiotics are going to be effective in treating those animals. So definitely not something they should just choose and say, that's something that I want to be able to use.
People might say what happens in Brazil is well and good and that won't affect things in Ireland, but is AMR a bigger problem than that? Is it a global problem?
AMR is a global problem, and it's probably going to be the biggest global problem that's going to affect both human and veterinary medicine over the coming decades. So, like, our ability to treat animals effectively and treat people effectively has been a huge game changer over the last 100 years. And bacterial diseases are treatable now, but if AMR continues to spread as it does, and through, you know, improper use of antibiotics, then that is going to be a huge problem, and it is probably going to be the biggest problem that's going to affect human health over the coming decades.
And I think there's an additional element to this, because to be fair, from an EU perspective, antimicrobial resistance isn't something that has just been paid lip service to. There's a target of a 50% reduction in the farm-to-fork strategy by 2030 in the EU from an AMR perspective, and huge strides are being made in that area. Irish farmers in particular have embraced the whole concept, appreciating the significance of antibiotic usage and need, not only in animal medicine and health, but from a human health perspective. And to date, we have reduced by 50% the usage of these higher priority, critically important antibiotics in Ireland. So it's not just that there is perceived controls here, there is rigid controls enforced and fully supported by farmers. And this has become much broader than just maybe a trade issue now. We're talking about a human health issue for generations to come. Because if these antibiotics lose effectiveness, which is effectively what AMR is, and it happens by uncontrolled and inappropriate and irresponsible use, then there's going to be huge human health challenges with the simplest of conditions going forward, because new antibiotics are not being developed. And I think Dr. Paddy Wall, who is a professor of public health in UCD, summed it up when he said public health cannot be compromised or selectively applied to facilitate trade deals. If AMR is a major global health threat that the EU and the WHO say it is, then the standards applied applied to EU farmers must also inform the conditions placed on imports. And what we found on that 3,000 kilometre journey across Brazil is that there isn't even the starting point for those standards, because that starts with the traceability system.
Yeah, it's just worlds apart, isn't it? Adam, it wasn't just antibiotics that you were shocked by over there. You also found some very different standards in relation to tagging and traceability of livestock.
Yeah, when we went into livestock marts, for example, in terms of monitoring those livestock coming in, it was back to a brand. You know, people will be familiar with using brands here on sheep to identify sheep for on a non-farm situation, not the official, we'll say, government legislation. But this was just a brand and iron into a bucket of paint and stamped on the side of the animal. And that was how they differentiated between the different people's animals in those marts. We found evidence of tag removal, a lot of animals with no tags at all, holes in the ears, and boxes of tags that have been cut out. And we even seen, we'll say, the application for cutting tags out of animals' ears for sale in some of those stores. So just wholesale differences as regards, you know, traceability. There is no movement records being kept of those animals moving to the mart. None that we've seen anyway in marts. Yeah, and on farms, a huge proportion of the cattle on farms, zero tags. Some of them had farm management tags, even in a factory lairage. Philip took photos of animals with no tags, and some just with marker, basically Sharpie wrote on numbers on onto the tags.
I think that was the biggest thing in those lairage, that you there was one or two that you'd see with a tag and the rest without. And we had lots of conversations about it where we'd say, oh well, just the tag there, was it not worse that some were tagged and some weren't tagged? It showed that the tagging was no
irrelevant.
It was irrelevant. It was just some farmer had put a tag into his cow, but he didn't do it for any reason other than what he was doing on farm.
And even what you're talking about, Adam, like it's when you say branding iron, it's not a Yellowstone branding iron that's always on the animal for life. It's just paint.
Yeah, paint. On some of the farms, we've seen that there was a gas heater there, we'll say, for heating up that branding iron, and it was burnt into the skin. So that obviously stayed with the animal for life then. But on these cases in marts, it was just paint was going on there to differentiate between the different people's animals in the mart.
And actually those animals in the mart, so while they were using paint to identify them coming into the mart, we have pictures, and some went into the paper last week, where you'd see the back of an animal and it had three different branding iron marks on them. So which was the last one?
Yeah. Tomás, it's light years away from genotyping and farm to fork traceability and being able to pick steak from an animal in your supermarket that Adam Woods, for example, produced on his farm in Cavan.
That's right, Katrina. I suppose the system in Brazil of animal identification is heavily, heavily based on branding that we've seen in the old westerns. And it's effectively just associate an animal with the fazenda or the ranch, as they call it. And it's to determine ownership of that animal. In relation to the tagging systems they have there, they're effectively voluntary systems, and farmers are using some tags as management tools on their farms. But any traceability system is the building blocks and is the foundation stones for certification of product. And if you have a country with 238 million animals, supposedly, in the country, but how do they know how many is there if they don't have an actual national database? It just cannot work. The system, and you've flicked it there, is the CISPOV system that's used by some farmers to actually determine their animals being eligible for the EU market. And that is merely just a computer program that's available to be used as management tools on farms, where farmers can selectively decide within a ranch of 50,000 cattle if they want to make some of them eligible for the Hilton quota or not. And again, their requirements, they are varied in understanding amongst farmers who are deemed eligible for that market. Some claiming that the animals had to be tagged by the time they were 10 months of age, which completely ignores where they had been for the previous 10 months and how they were treated. And other farmers had an understanding that once they were tagged, inside 90 days of before they were slaughtered. But again, with no compulsory numbering, no national database to verify it, when you compare that to here, the first thing that every farm has to have here is be approved by the Department of Agriculture to actually hold animals and be issued with a herd number. And within that herd number, then every single animal that is born on that farm or moves into that farm is recorded on it. For its lifetime, that animal is then associated with that number, but also a record of having been on that farm. And if it moves on to two, three, four other farms, and critically what that level of traceability does. And it goes all the way as far as fallen animal disposal. A dead animal on our farm, be it a stillborn calf or a dead calf or a fallen cow, has to be moved, can only be moved from the farm through a licensed knackery. We have evidence of fallen animals being just left there in the wilderness. So if you don't have that type of a complete database, then from an EU perspective, you cannot credibly certify product. There is too many gaping holes in the process, and our system allows every piece of meat that is sold from an Irish farm to be traced back not only to the farm it was slaughtered from, but to every farm that it stood on during its lifetime. And again, we talk about EUDR. In the absence of that, there is no way that the Brazilian authorities can actually credibly certify animals, whether or not they were reared on deforested land, let alone the whole issue that we spoke about earlier in relation to antibiotics. Because how can you have a credible recording system in relation to the levels of usage if you don't have every single animal recorded, if you don't have an inventory of who purchased the antibiotics in order to be accountable and competent authority oversight? In this country, we've gone a step further in both areas. We have our national genotyping system, which has the actual DNA of the animal, which can correctly verify not only where the animal was, but its parentage, the dam and the sire of the animal. In addition, from a prescribing perspective, and in order to align with EU regulatory requirements for veterinary medicinal products, we now have the NVPS, where every single prescription is visible to the competent authority that's issued for every single animal on my farm and by the vet. And in relation to those higher priority, critically important antibiotics, just to give an example of the differences, as Adam said, we walked in blindly and pointed at a box on the shelf, and we bought bottles of high priority third generation cephalosporins, as easy as you would buy a bottle of Coke or a bar of chocolate in these very same shops. In Ireland, in order for a vet to prescribe that product, a vet with a knowledge of the farm who's on it, he has to do sensitivity and susceptibility testing and culturing before he's actually allowed to prescribe the product. And it can never be used as a frontline product. And these are the differences that just cannot be covered. And we talk about safeguards in the EU Mercosur trade deal. It's laughable, Katrina, in the sense that they just don't have the basic foundation stones. They're talking about a national register identification program that's going through legislation over there now with a target date of implementation by 2032. And it's an impossibility. And all it is a pipe dream to appease EU legislators to try and get another 99,000 tons of Brazilian beef into the EU with a perceived control program. They're putting in beef into the EU with the last 20 or 30 years, and they haven't got the systems up and running. And the DG Sante audits have found that. Every single audit they have found issues with certification, they've found issues with identification, and we have gone out on the ground and covered 3,000 kilometres and shown that it's a lot worse than what the EU auditors are actually finding.
That was part two of our Brazilian beef investigation. What becomes clear in this episode is that the issue goes well beyond farming systems alone. The discussion around antibiotic use and antimicrobial resistance connects agriculture directly with global human health, something scientists and regulators have been warning about for years. The contrast between regulatory systems is also striking. In countries like Ireland and here in New Zealand, antibiotic use in livestock is tightly controlled through veterinary oversight, prescription systems, and detailed recording of medicine use. The investigation suggests that in parts of Brazil, those same controls simply don't exist in the same way. Alongside that are questions around livestock identification and traceability systems that underpin both food assurance programs and allow consumers to follow meat products back through the supply chain. For farmers operating in highly regulated systems, those differences matter. They shape consumer trust, market access, and ultimately how global competition between producing nations plays out. Next week, in part three, we look at the wider implications of the investigation, including what it could mean for international trade and how different production standards collide when beef moves across borders. That's coming up in the final part of the series here on the Weekly Hotwire. Thank you for listening, and catch you next time.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.